The Indiana Pacers have a new head coach. The NBA and NFL are both in lockouts, and it's All-Star Week for Major League Baseball. A lot going on, a lot to talk about, and you've come to the right place. Welcome to TYS20. It's been a while since I've been on the air. Had some vacation time, but now I am back and ready to rock and roll with this week's sports podcast. In a few minutes, I'm going to welcome Seth Lawrence back to the show. Many of you might remember Seth from our divisional previews before the baseball season started. He'll be here to talk about the first half in Major League Baseball. It's kind of hard to believe that it's already time for the All-Star Game. But before we talk baseball, I've got some things to say about my beloved Indiana Pacers in what is probably one of the most important off-seasons in franchise history. The Pacers are off to a great start. First, they make a great trade by bringing in hometown kid George Hill. And I've said for several months that the Pacers don't need any more rookies. They need some experienced guys to help the already talented young core. And George Hill is only 25 years old, but he's got 3 years of experience playing with the Spurs, one of the best organizations in sports. He's played with some future Hall of Famers. He's got lots of playoff experience. He can play the one and two guard spots. He can defend. He can definitely score. And he's going to bring some leadership to this team. And all it really cost the Pacers was their 15th overall pick in a weak draft. And this is a guy that could potentially be a six-man of the year type candidate, or he could even challenge guys like Collison and George for a starting spot. I'll say this much, I think Hill's going to be on the floor a lot in the fourth quarter. Just a great pickup for us. We'll see how it shakes out. But for an opening move, that was wonderful for the team to do. Another thing that this move did for the Pacers is they still have Brandon Rush and A.J. Price and a few other guys that they could still possibly trade. So they acquired George Hill. They kept everyone else. So they still have trade options open. And, of course, as we've been talking about at length, they still have all that cap room. So great move for the blue and gold. I can't wait to see Hill play for his hometown team. When that'll be, I have no idea, of course, with the lockout going on. Then after that, the Pacers did exactly what I wanted them to do in terms of the coaching position. They went after Rick Adelman, and Adelman turned the Pacers down. Now, I understand at this point in his career, Adelman wants a veteran team that is ready to contend for a title. Now, I think the Pacers could end up making Adelman regret his decision because I think the Pacers are one or maybe two players away right now from being at least a top five team in the Eastern Conference. But I can't understand Adelman's desires at this point in his career. So we don't get Adelman, and we end up giving the job to Frank Vogel. Now, I'm not overly excited about him being the full-time coach, as I've talked about before. But what I am excited about is the new coaching staff around Frank Vogel. Brian Shaw is our main assistant coach now. Many people thought he would be the next head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. In fact, that's who Kobe Bryant, Ron Artest, and some other guys wanted. But he's our assistant. So now if Vogel struggles, Shaw could easily be the next coach in waiting, which also pushes Vogel to do a better job. Overall, our coaching staff looks to be improved. And Larry Bird and company have told Vogel that he needs to be tougher with the players. That was another concern. So it really seems like Larry Bird knows what he's doing more and more with each passing year, and that's great to see. So we didn't get Adelman, but we at least tried for him. Vogel with a better coaching staff around him, I'm definitely okay with that. And the good news for the Pacers doesn't end there. Some of you may have heard this. Kevin Pritchard has been brought on board. Now, Kevin was the general manager for the Trailblazers years ago, and he was the one that turned that franchise completely around. And he's now here to help with the player personnel. He could very easily take over for Larry Bird next season if Bird chooses to retire, which sounds likely. So with our cap room and with all the moves that we could potentially make, having another voice who's had success in the past like Kevin Pritchard, this is yet another good move for the Indiana Pacers. So even though the NBA is in a lockout, it has been a heck of an offseason so far for the Pacers, and hopefully they're just getting started. Let's hope the lockout can get resolved and the Pacers can get back to improving their team even more. And I'll plan on bringing Pacers insider Chris Goff back on the show in the near future, especially if the lockout ends and any more moves
are made.
All right, now we're moving on to Major League Baseball. It's All-Star Week, always a fun time to be a fan. And at this time, let's welcome Seth Lawrence back to the show. Seth, how have you been, man?
Awesome, T.Y. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Seth, let's begin by talking about the All-Star game first. I had a question to ask you about the rule, about the home field advantage. I personally think that the rule of home field advantage for the World Series, for whoever wins the All-Star game, is one of the dumbest rules in the history of dumb rules. Yeah, it makes the game interesting, but to me, there's no reason to think like a guy from the Houston Astros could impact whether or not the guys from the Phillies, you know, have home field advantage. Not only that, but if they're really trying to win the game, they would leave guys like Albert Pujols in for the full game instead of giving him a couple of bats. Just my opinion, but how do you feel about this whole thing?
Well, I think the goal was to make the game competitive, and I think they, I don't like it personally, and I think if, I kind of spit joke here earlier, and I heard a really interesting idea on the radio. And one of it was, the Futures team has the World Stars and the USA Stars. And I think if they did that, instead of making it a divisional game, they took the Stars from the different countries that come to America to play, and then the Stars of America, and had them play, I actually think that would make the game a ton more, if a fun, and I think the players would get into it a ton more as well. And, you know, it would be almost a yearly World Baseball Classic, and it's just a fun game where the guys all get together and have a good time, where it doesn't mean anything, but yet it still is a competitive ball game because you want to represent your country or your whatever really well. So I think that would be a good way to go about it, but the way they went about it, I don't like.
Yeah, I'll say this much. You know, I'm excited to watch the game tonight, and I do like how it's more competitive and it does mean something, but tonight's about the only night out of the whole year that I like the idea. So they did accomplish where people are more interested in the game, but the rule itself is just beyond stupid, if you ask me. But I have another All-Star question for you. Should every team have to have the one representative, or should they just pick who they think are the best 30 players?
I think it should be the best 30 players. I don't see how a team like the Oakland Athletics, where they have pretty much nobody that's deserving to go. I mean, you can pick out maybe some of their pitchers, but you can't tell me any of those pitchers are having a better year than a guy like CeCe Sabathia, who's getting snubbed. Or you mentioned the Astros. There's literally on the Astros, there's probably nobody on that team deserving to go right now. And yet a guy like Arvis Ramirez is left out. You know, there's a handful of other guys, you know, all over the place. Pujols isn't there. You know, you can't tell me that there's guys from the Astros right now that deserve to go. I think if you, you know, give the guys, the young guys that those two teams have time to develop, eventually they're all stars, but not this year. And when the game is the deciding factor for World Series home field advantage, I just don't think that's a really, really good rule. In the NBA, that's fine, because the game is meaningless. It's just a fun pickup game. But in baseball, it's got to, you know, if you're going to make the game that big, you've got to say, we need the best players here, whether or not they're from every team or not. You've got to have the best players there.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, this second question goes along with the first one, like you were kind of mentioning there. If the game does mean home field advantage, then I think they need to bring in the best 30 players no matter what. If they go back to how I think the All-Star game should be, where it's more of a fun thing but still competitive, then at that point I would like having every team represented, because usually there's only, you know, maybe three or four teams that have guys that can't muster up at least one All-Star. And that way every, you know, fan base is interested in the game. I remember last year when the Cubs were just terrible, Marlon Byrd was the only representative, and he didn't really deserve to go, but he played well in the All-Star game, and it gave me a little bit of Cub pride for once. But, you know, things like that, there's good stories. But again, if it's going to be home field advantage for the World Series, then they need the best 30 players. And this year there's been a lot of flack for the Major League Baseball from the fans about how a lot of guys are just not taking the invitation to the All-Star game, saying they're hurt or just saying they don't want to go. You mentioned Aramis Ramirez. I don't know if you heard this. He was actually invited to go to the All-Star game as a replacement for Chipper Jones. And he said no.
Yeah,
Yeah, he said no, he wants to go back home for 3 days, and I can't say I blame him for wanting to go back home when you live far away, but a lot of times the best players aren't even there.
Well, and here's the other, I guess the flip side of that coin for Aramis Ramirez here. He wasn't voted in, and he wasn't even like a first or second alternate. I mean, this is like, you know, they're going through players to get to him, and now he's like third or fourth or fifth on the list. You know, and to say, well, I wasn't an all-star originally, why do you want me now? Because three other guys have turned you down. Like, I personally know what that's like to have, you know, three or four guys turn you down so they turn to you because, you know, you're next in line. That's not a really, you know, it's kind of a feeling of, well, I wasn't good enough originally. I don't, you know, I'm not going to go there now because you don't have anybody to fill your roster out. I know where that, you know, where he's coming from was to say that, to say no to that. At the same time, I agree with you, though. I don't think some of the players are taking it seriously as far as the older guys. I think the young guys enjoy it. Like, you know, Robinson Cano hit in his first home run derby last night. And it's always fun to see guys like David Ortiz who have been there year after year after year. And they just find a way to make it fun, and they enjoy it, you know. And it's probably easier for Ortiz if he's a DH. But at the same time, it's still fun to see guys like that enjoy the game.
Yep, I agree completely, and once again, it all comes back to that first thing we talked about. You know, if a guy like Aramis Ramirez is saying no, he doesn't want to go to the All-Star game because he's third or fourth in line, then you end up getting guys who are fifth and sixth in line, and yet they're still playing for a chance to have home field advantage in the World Series. That's why it just makes absolutely no sense. But looking forward to the All-Star game tonight regardless, and as we look back at the first half of the season, Seth, what has been your biggest surprise or surprises of the year so far? We'll see if we have any differences here.
I think the Giants, to me, has kind of been the surprise. I'm looking at the standings right here, and you know, I'm sure, you know, either you think or somebody out there thinks the Indians were kind of a surprise. I personally am not that surprised at their success, you kind of see them slowing down. But I think the Giants just lacked offense. And they're 3 games ahead in a pretty offensive heavy division. I mean, you've got the Rockies who have some big bats, the Dodgers, and I think Arizona's the same thing. I think they're a big surprise out there. I guess the Western National League division is a surprise to me to see San Francisco atop, and Arizona in particular in second place.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's a great thing about baseball. There's always some teams, especially at least there's always one team that surprises everyone. For me, the biggest surprise of the season has been the Pittsburgh Pirates. Granted, they're in a very weak division, but they're above 500. They're right in the race. I think they're like a game or two back. And, you know, let's be honest, I could see them falling flat on their face in the second half. But this is a big deal. This is a team that only won 17 games on the road the entire season last year. And I think right now they're either 500 or above on the road this season. So that's been a great story. Of course, a team that hasn't had a winning record in 19 years. So to me, that's the big surprise. But I agree with you, especially about the Diamondbacks out west. Who's your MVP so far in each league of the first half of the season?
In the American League, I'm going to say Jose Bautista. He is mashing the baseball. And not only is he mashing, but he's hitting for a really good average. I would put Adrian Gonzalez up there, but I think his lineup is a lot better, and the top of his order is a lot better to drive guys in. And Bautista, you know, he's not the only power bat, and he's not the only bat in that lineup, but I think what he's doing is really carrying Toronto right now. In the National League of TY, I'm probably going to go out west and say Matt Kemp. I mean, that guy is having a crazy year. And the Dodgers are terrible, but Matt Kemp is the, you know, everything off the field with that team. Matt Kemp is the bright spot for that team, and he is showing the baseball world the talent that he was hyped up to be just a few years back.
Interesting choices there. I definitely see the Bautista thing. I originally had Adrian Gonzalez, but you make a good point there about Bautista's lineup being weaker. And Bautista's on my fantasy team, so I got to give him some props there. But National League, I definitely have Kemp up there along with a couple other guys. Reyes is just having a great year, hitting .354, 26 steals. And Ryan Braun, who was your preseason pick to win MVP, He's hitting over 320, 60 RBIs, and he's got 19 stolen bases this season. So, of course, he's in a good lineup as well. But a lot of good players there, and I think MVP is going to be quite a race this season with Pujols missing some time and other guys having good years. Now, the Cy Young, that's the next thing on the list. There's a lot of good pitchers. Who do you have in each league for that so far?
I would go Jared Weaver or Dan Heron because they're pitching pretty well. I would say Casey, but I think he started a little slow and now he's starting to pick it up. And, you know, I don't want to take the generic pick in a Yankee. So I'm going to go, probably going to go Jared Weaver just because he's a young guy. He's really talented. He can carry a team and
Yeah, in the National League, I kind of have a tie between Halladay and Jair Jurgens, who's having a heck of a year. ERA below 2 so far, and I think he's 12-3. In the American League, I'm actually going with Justin Verlander. He's got a kind of a calmer presence about him this year. He's being more consistent. Really good ERA, a ton of strikeouts. He had that no-hitter, or was it a perfect game? Was it no-hitter? One of those. Yeah, it was a no-hitter. Yeah. So he's pitching great. Interesting fact, though, to share with everyone. Right now at the All-Star break, there are 20 starting pitchers with an ERA lower than 3. That's a lot. That's pretty crazy to think about. Yeah. All right, so... Yeah. Last question I have is, how do the current standings compare... And you can just make a note on some of these if you want. How do the current standings compare to your preseason predictions, and what do you expect to see in the second half of the baseball season?
Well, I think, if somebody thinks anybody but Philadelphia in the National League East, they're nuts. The East is as tight, or the American League East is as tight of a race as we thought it would be. I think the Chi Sox has been a bit of a disappointment. The American League West is gonna go down to the wire. I think I picked the Angels there, so they're a game out. I think that race is gonna be a fun one down the stretch. The Central, I think, is extremely intriguing now that you throw Pittsburgh into the mix, and it looks like they've got some pitching to not only back up their solid first half, but the offense. They've got some really young players that are coming together and playing well, and Jose Tabata comes back, I think that race is going to be very, very interesting. And, you know, what does Pittsburgh do at the trade deadline? Every year they're a seller. Are they a buyer this year? I mean, that's crazy to think about. I picked Milwaukee in that division because of the three starting pitchers they have up top there. You know, they've got to get some consistency with those three guys, but I think they're most definitely capable of taking that one. In the West, in the National League, who knows with that one? I mean, Colorado right now, 8.5 games out, 500. And they're a notorious second-half team. I can't see the Dodgers or the Padres competing, but it's baseball. Who knows?
Yeah, the NL Central is pretty depressing to me. If you remember what I said earlier in the year, I said that if the Cubs can just be a 500 team, they're going to be a contender in this division. And that's exactly what would have happened had they been 500. They would only be like a game or two out.
My Mets are 11 games out in the East, and right now they would be just 3 or 4 games back in the, maybe not even that much, in the Central right now. You know, so it just kind of shows the parity in baseball right now.
Yep, so I'm going to be depressed about that for a long time because the Cubs are definitely not going to be in the race this year when they definitely could have, obviously by playing a whole lot better and being healthier. But the Rockies, as you mentioned, are always a good second-half team, and I'm counting on them because I picked them to win that division, and they got off to a red-hot start. But that's going to be intriguing for me to watch in the second half. Red Sox and Phillies was a lot of people's pick for the World Series. I can definitely still see that happening, but I think there's going to be a lot of tight races in the second half and probably some crazy trades in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, you talked about the Rockies. That team could play in New York every weekend. I mean, Lord knows where they'd be right now.
Absolutely. Well, Seth, I appreciate it as always, talking some baseball with you, and we'll probably touch base again towards the end of the July or sometime in August to discuss all the trades that went down in baseball. Thanks a lot for stopping in again.
Hey, thanks for having me, T.Y. It's always fun.
All right, so enjoy the All-Star game tonight, and let's get these lockouts over with. That's all the time we have this week on the show. Thanks so much for listening. As Harry Carey would always say, only the shadow knows. Take care. Have a great week.